Okay, today is the 10th of June 2023. The time here in Vienna is 6:05 a.m. This is the third session of an interview with Prachi Mehta, and this interview forms part of a series I'm doing looking at the intersection of science with conservation policy and conservation action in India. This interview is being conducted over Zoom. Like I said, I'm in Vienna and Prachi is currently in Pune. Prachi, the last time when we finished speaking, we were talking about the formation of WRCS, and it was at the time when you'd set up Envirosearch. Envirosearch was 5 years old, and then you decided to set up an NGO. I wanted to ask, over the years there have been two main areas of focus for WRCS. At least that's the way it seems from the outside, looking at the website and looking at the work you've done. One is human elephant conflict coexistence, and the other is the forest owlet work. Can you talk a little bit about, maybe to start with, how the human elephant conflict work began? Because my sense is that maybe that preceded the forest owlet work. You're already doing some work on human elephant conflict as part of EnviroSearch.
Yes, that's right. And so, as you said, there are two main areas of focus. I mean, there is one more I would like to add, Hari, and that is actually conservation of corridor forests in Western Ghats. So, that has also been one of our long-term projects, which actually is Jayant's project.
Okay.
And he's been managing it for now almost 2000, almost 11, 10, 10, 11 years. And we are working in that area for a very, very long time. In a sense, 11 years, as I said, yeah, but the project is being continued through different agencies. And so that is also one of our area of long-term focus, So coming back to elephant work, yes. So, this is very interesting. So in 2003, we were just with Envirosearch, and we were visiting Bangalore. For some work we had come. I told you, we used to do some kind of that time consultancy, and my daughter was very small, so I had also come to meet Karant, that time he was with CWS. So we had gone to meet him and all that. And that time the PCCF, so Jayant had gone to meet the PCCF, and I was with my daughter in the rest house in Malleshwaram, and we were planning to go to Kodagu just on a visit. We were on a road trip, okay. So as it so happened that the PCCF that time I think was a Bengali person, Chakravarti. So Jayant just prompted that to me. So he said that so Jayant was introduced as a person who's working in Maharashtra, next IFS officer. So he said, "See, we have a lot of issues in on elephants. Would you like to work on elephants in Kodagu?" So we didn't know much about what a hot spot and what a trouble spot it is, that time. So Jayant said, "Okay, I'll talk to Prachi and I'll let you know." Then he came and told me, this is what the PCCF is saying. There could be some, like project opportunity for 2 years." I said, "Kodagu? Wow!" we were just, I mean, I told you, whatever was driven by the landscape there, whatever in it, it's so nice to see. I still had that childish feeling of going to different areas. I said, yes, Jayant, let's take it up, We didn't know that it was such a troubled hotspot that time. But then we met Cheryl, who had already earlier done some work, and I knew her from WII, Cheryl Nath, my student here. So then, and then we started our work. So that is our first work on elephants. That's when we realized that the situation is very, very complex in Karnataka. So we were just working, and and that actually also opened up our views about conservation, how people are doing, and what are the measures department is using. Like trenches and say fences. And somewhere we realized that there has to be a lot more effort from the people's side also, if we have to, protect. And then along this line, at the same time, so when we finished this work, we had got some insights into elephant conservation. By then it was 2005, and we realized we should We need to do something of our own instead of just taking up consultancies and waiting for opportunities to come. We have to create our own. So by then we had established WRCS, and we approached Maharashtra Forest Department because elephants from Karnataka had already come to Maharashtra by then. Yeah, so we said that, you know, see, now we've gained some insights, and why don't we do some work on elephants in Maharashtra? So by 2006 or something, 7, we started, you know, with the funds from Maharashtra Forest Department. We did a work, and we till 2011 we were working in Maharashtra. We made an action plan also. There were some very small number of elephants which had come, and Maharashtra, it was the first time, you know, elephants, wild elephants were seen in Maharashtra. So people were like, you know, it was a very confused reaction, like what to do, whether to worship them, to welcome them, or to not drive them away. And it was complete chaos that time. So we participated in that this thing, and we made an action plan that, okay, and I remember the title which Jayant gave, a case it's coming to terms with presence of elephants, you know, a state coming to terms with the presence of elephants, case study of Maharashtra elephants, you know. So then so that was around 2000, while we were working. Then this was still going on, 2007 to 11. 11, we made the action plan, and 2009 the CEPF opportunity came, you know, for grant proposals. CEPF through ATRI. Yeah. So then I had got very interested in elephant conservation by then, and in between I had also visited northeast states like West Bengal, Assam, Manipur, to understand how they are managing their elephants. You know, so especially in West Bengal and Assam, I stayed with some of the NGOs to understand, you know, what they are doing to manage, because that was really now interesting, you know, for us. So then CEPF, I wrote up a proposal to work in Maharashtra. Okay, we would like to work in this problem in Maharashtra. And that time Ajay Desai was there, you know, in the committee. So he said, no, Prachi, why don't you see, Maharashtra elephants are very small. Instead, will you work in North Canara district, where elephants are like the adjacent district to Maharashtra border of Karnataka, and Karnataka and Maharashtra border is North Canara district. And he said, see, there's a small population, and that's where these elephants are coming from. That is the source population, and just now you start your work there. So then that's how we said, okay. I had a discussion, me and Jayan had a discussion with Ajay. He said, we don't know much about the landscape, and we don't even know the language there. They said, no, you see, we need some, nobody has studied that population, that is the northernmost population in the Western Ghats. And we had been to that landscape, you know, as a tourist, like, you know, in that area. So we said, oh, that's a nice landscape, lots of birds, you know, all that. Yeah, nice place to study, kind of do a study, you know. So we agreed, and that's how we started the elephant project. And then through that project, and I have CPFC, then I had went to Beijing for an Asian elephant conservation. They had invited me. I had just started off. Then they said, okay, you know, we want some more young researchers to come and talk about it. So we went. It was in 2010 in Beijing, 9-10, yeah. And there I met a lot of people, you know, so that also helped me. And I met Mini Nagendran, you must from your session. When
I've heard the name, yes.
she was there, and I was just talking to her, and she said, ki, this sounds like a good idea, why don't you submit a proposal to us? And by then we had come up with our own ideas, Hari, is that see, engineering solutions like trenches, or say which the department always you know advocates, or fences, and after some time it just does not stay. The shelf life is very small, you know, because there is no maintenance. And by then we had, and Maharashtra by then had dug up massive trenches, you know, and it was terrible to see that everything was just going down the drain, literally, because they were all getting filled up with water and soil erosion and all. This is what, from my understanding of conservation, came through this kind of discussions and all this. I mean, I used to go with Jayant, and you know, that time he used to tell me, this is, look, this soil is just getting washed away. What is the point of getting these huge 6-6 feet deep EPTs, you know? It's ugly. So, and entire landscape was changing. So my idea started getting formed, you know, what we need to do. And then we started this community-based conflict management concept. That, unless farmers own it, they take responsibility. The ownership comes from the farmers. This problem is going to remain where how it is and where it is. Because after making trenches or say fences, nobody looks after it. And we've seen this in the field. Everywhere, the department had made a huge expenditure on putting these barricades here, even in Maharashtra and even in Karnataka. We had seen that, in Kodagu especially. And it would work till, say, for a year or 2 years till they have the funds or they have the manpower. And after, with the change of the officer or with the, non-availability of funds, those systems would just collapse. And we are back again where we were. So then then by then I had read up a lot about community-based conflict, which is most popular model in Africa. So some of these, Osborne and those famous authors. So I read and we got quite convinced about that model. And I told Jayant, "K, North Canada, we will do this." So he just looked at me and said, "Prachi, you don't even know the language. How are you going to talk?" I said, "No, but as a concept, I said we should try this." And then we started with that concept in North Canada district.
So, Prati, can you you mentioned that you worked with some NGOs in the Northeast and West Bengal. Can what are the names of some of these NGOs,
Yeah,
just as a kind
work with, I went and saw their
of to
work
observe
once.
their work?
Yeah, observed their work. I didn't work with them. So Aranyak was one, Assam Hathi project. That time it was running. Nandita Gautam,
Nandita.
then Vibhuti, then WWF Assam, India was there working very actively in Assam. So they of course they're so I just wanted to see what are the other NGOs or department measures, especially in these high elephant conflict areas. What are they doing? There was Kunki's, they were managing it with Kunki's, they were managing it with relocation, Sonitpur area in Assam. Then there was these were all real hotspots, and they still remain like that. So troubled areas, because and I went for elephant drives at night with the staff and I saw what was happening. It really disturbed me, 200 elephants, coming in one row. And because they had to, they are coming from Nepal, so they are this trans-boundary migrant elephants which are coming down. So nobody wants them, and from one range to the other range, they're just being pushed. And I was there, and I somehow disturbed me a lot, And I said, this and see, North Canara area does not have such a high conflict as Kodagu or say Bandipur area, because the elephant population itself is small. It's around about 80 elephants. But what we thought is that, and what we had discussed with Ajay, is that, see, just now if you establish certain models, so the people who can accept it are the people who are not really, aggrieved by the elephant intensity of conflict, So here there is a lot of conflict, but it's not comparable to what you see in Bandipur, these areas, So it's like there will be about 600 or 1,000 cases in division in a year because these are seasonal elephants. No, the entire year they stay in Kali Tiger Reserve, that is earlier Dandeli Anchi Tiger Reserve, and then they come out during the rice season, paddy season. Okay, so this is what I understood, and that is why we said, okay, then we should try at when the elephant conflict is not as high as in say Assam, West Bengal, and other areas. And try to see what is the acceptability of this model. So West Bengal, I saw was that they were trying. Some of them were also doing this, early alert system, which I learned from Aranyak. Bhupati, I went and stayed in their project sites to understand how they are managing. WWF was using Kunki's, which I thought was very expensive. You will have to have that kind of run of funds, all throughout, and the department have to supply that kind of elephants, trained elephants, things like that. So here we came up with a very low cost, low tech solution for CBCM, where we said, okay, we will use early alerts, then chili based deterrents, which can. So of course that time people used to, and even now they think it's not really useful, but I can tell you that our project is showing very good results. We have not been able to come up with a publication for some other reason, because we were from Elephant Project. Though the data is almost already, but now this year we are going to do it. Yeah, apart from that, so sorry if I'm just digressing. You were asking a specific question. So
yeah,
yeah, I did
fine.
With a few of these people, met the staff, met the people, the local people, the farmers understood, and then we implemented a model in Nagya.
So from the beginning, when you started this work, you know, 2003, 2005, how much of your work has, what has been the nature of the work? Has it been a lot of research, formal research, or is it more like going and finding out about the situation in a more qualitative way? And has the nature of the work changed over time from the time when you started in 2003?
Yeah, so see, as I said, no, I was always more interested in the research aspect of it, and Jayak was more interested in conservation aspect. So I would still, like, you know, I would still write up proposals for looking at bird diversity along Western Ghats, looking at giant squirrel distribution along Western Ghats, or say tiger monitoring, which involve wildlife, you know. Whereas Jayak's focus had always remained on conservation, you know, of landscape. And he, of course, also being a techie person, he would always support me in these projects. But his project would be more of looking at how the landscape has changed, or how one can retain this particular area, the species in this area. So we developed along these our ideas along these lines, you know.
Sorry, Katya, just to clarify, I was asking. Right now, in the context of the elephant work itself,
oh, elephant work.
yeah.
So you said, can you just?
Yeah. So I was just wondering what the nature of the work is. You know, when is it in all of these projects, has the emphasis been on going and doing research to understand the situation? Or is it more like, I don't know, a fact finding kind of exercise? And has that changed over time, the emphasis in your work?
So yeah, it has to. So we first collect the baseline data, that's right. So, you know, fact finding becomes the first this thing, and then we overlay it with you know, different questions from our side, like the elephants are coming to, say, this particular season or particular area only, then where are they staying inside, and what is the kind of food availability for them? So then it becomes more of a quantitative kind of a research. You do vegetation transects, look at what are the food plants available, you know. So that and actually field work, you know, to not just depend on secondary data. I mean, that we use it, but I think we believe a lot in verifying and carrying out actually ecological work wherever our projects are. So that has been our mainstay for all projects, that, you know, we need to do ground truthing and look at the situation at the ground. We did this for elephants in Karnataka also, and even in Kodagu 2003-5 when we were saying. So we actually, even in Kodagu when we were there, we looked at, we mapped the you know, corridor from where the Hassan, then the different divisions which were there. Getting the name now, but yeah, and we also had mentioned that this Katepura area is too small for elephants, you know, that, may not be able to support so many elephants which are coming. And we had suggested that there should be some kind of a connectivity corridor. You know, those days were very early days, but what I understand is that we had also initiated this kind of discussions those days, that, and we had said that maybe this particular elephants which are coming to Katepura area can be translocated, just and make sure that the more elephants don't come inside. You know, so these were our understanding, earlier understanding.
And you said that, you know, what you eventually decided to do in North Karnataka was inspired by what you were reading about the models they were using in Africa. Yeah, can you talk a little more about that? And, you know, also in terms of how this was different from what people were doing at that point in time in India. Was there something different that you were learning from what was happening in Africa?
Yeah, sure. So, see, while in Kodagu, no, we visited all these huge, orchards, new rich people's farms in Kodagu. Question what their perceptions were about elephants. And what we realized, only if they could protect their own farm, because they were asking that the government, these are government cattle and they should be taken by the government. And why we should do anything, why we should spend money. All of them, most of them had this kind of an approach. And I would just sit and listen and I would say, okay, but what if you just fenced off your own farm? Then, at least the elephant won't come inside your farm and it has free access to wherever it wants to go. And they would say, why we should spend the money? We don't have that kind of money. And where I could see they were sitting in these palatial, houses with two Mercedes in the porch. And I said, yeah, but how much would this cost? Like, let's talk about the costing. And those days it was like, what would come to what? A few lakhs of rupees, which was not a very high cost. And but uniformly, I saw this attitude amongst people, that we will not change our ways, we will not change anything from our side. It is entirely the government which has to, look after us and pay us and just take away the elephants. And I said, how about changing some cropping? You use pepper instead of, using coconut or say some. I mean, I was just trying to find out basically. I was also reading up, trying to understand. What I thought was that people were not ready to take any responsibility there. They just wanted everything on a platter, and these were rich farmers. I mean, rich farm orchard owners, plantation owners, right? So when this is what struck me, most, and when I went to West Bengal and this place, and I saw, okay, this really marginal or mediocre farmers were doing things for themselves. They were trying to make some local triple arms, like the pendle or the beer bottle hanging, so that they won't know when the elephants come, things like that. And from there, I started developing some ideas. And when I read what is happening in Africa, I was very attracted by this community-based conflict management, CBCM as they call it, model. So in India, see, it's still not very popular because we are very dependent on for everything that our government gives. So whatever. So even the farmers, they want everything free. And so I don't want to make a statement about farmers or urban or rural people, but everywhere, that is the kind of a attitude or perception that we have, is that it's not our problem. The elephants are government's property and they should do everything for us. They are not seeing that how much encroachment has taken, how many kilometers they have gone inside the forest. They're right on the boundary of the forest. And you can't blame an elephant, if it smells this intoxicating paddy smell, I mean, which elephants are the sugar canes, the bananas waving in front of them, which animal will, resist? But all this, when I saw, and I started sort of getting into the perspective. And in that time, it was in India, it was just EPTs. Even now, it continues to be all kind of solar fences, all physical barriers. So what we call engineering solutions. So protect the crop. These are government will put a trench here, dig it up, and it's very beneficial for the, forest department, because see, there is lot of unseen costs which goes there, and it can be claimed, and it's a fact. So there is a lot of opportunities for, what do you say, expenses which can go in other people's pockets also. You know what I mean, is that is why this systems are being perpetuated also. And I learned this by meeting the forest department in Maharashtra, in Karnataka, everywhere it's the same situation. Then I once also talked this to Project Elephant director, who's Mr. Khanduri. I just went and told him. He said, are you saying that people are putting it in their pockets? I said, sir, it is very beneficial if you have a, kilometers long trench and you put in so many numbers of labor payment, who's going to go and check? And this trench is going to be completely ineffective in a year's time, because it just gets washed away. So he says, yeah, I know, unfortunately, we don't know what to do. What else can we do? We just have to pacify the people. So this is what I was understanding from government, from the farmers, from the forest department. And when I found this model, it sort of appealed to me that, no, we should try. It was not easy, Hari. I tell you, that was also like, a very uphill task. Then he was telling me how you're going to manage. I said, you just let me be, I'll try. Yeah, so first, so that's how I got this idea to answer your question.
Okay. So, Prachi, maybe we'll come back to the elephant work a little later in this conversation. I wanted to ask you now about the origins of your interest in the forest owl. When did that happen, and how did it start?
So I love owls. I love bird watching. That's how I told you, I'm an accidental bird watcher and became a researcher. I mean, I have actually accidental researcher. Sorry, I used to love birding.
Sorry,
and that's how
Prachi.
I
just I, the audio was scrambled. Can you just repeat what you just said?
I said I loved birding. I became an accidental researcher. I said
Sorry.
that's how
Okay.
I got into it. No, I told you about it. I was just lured by the prospect of just going to the field, taking pictures, being in the forest. And then, of course, I became a researcher. So, and owls were my favorite. I would love, and raptors also, like any raptors and owls, So, while I was doing my PhD, I would also note down, like what are the raptors which are there in each of these sites. I would look for their nests and all, even owls. So after this rediscovery of forest owl, I think it was in 1997, she did it, she rediscovered it in northern Maharashtra, and then Farah Ishtiyar reported it from Melghat tiger reserve in 2000 when she did the survey. So I was very excited. Of course, I had not rediscovered it, but I said ki, I was in Melghat, but I didn't find it, but I was very excited. And here, let me tell you one small thing, See, I had seen the forest owl at Hari, but I could not make out it was a forest owl when I was in Melghat. So I thought it was a juvenile of some owl. Okay, and I just let it be. I never claimed credit because I never posted it, I never told anybody. But I remember being very confused by this owl. I said, this one must be a juvenile. It looks so mixed and confused, pattern. And I left it at that. Because that time we didn't have, the access that she had, skins and all. So there were no clear illustrations of the forest, right? It has complete white belly. So it was very good that, Farah Ishtiyak, she found it. And I was very excited. And then from 2005, we started WRCS, and I think a part of it was still with Enviro Search. We started a five state survey. From Odisha, so these are the type localities. So when I read up these papers, when the papers started coming and they described, where the skins were collected, so that was Odisha, Chhattisgarh, then it was Eastern Madhya Pradesh, now Chhattisgarh, then Madhya Pradesh, Maharashtra, and Gujarat. So these five state surveys, we got funds from various agencies, because it's 2 years work just to look to locate the forest, locate the forest owl, and we did this, and we found two new locations in Madhya Pradesh. So this researcher who was with me, Dharmaraj Patil, he was from Pune. Unfortunately, he expired last year.
Oh,
a young fellow,
sorry.
Yeah. So he was on the team, and we reported two new locations, and this was in the reserve forest. And of course, Melghat had a population by then. So by then, 2008 or 2009, there were already populations reported from Toranmal, where Farah did her study, Girish Jethar did his study from BNHS. His study on ecology of forest owl. And then what we found in Madhya Pradesh. And we did not find the forest owl in Gujarat that time, when we did the survey. But eventually, they did find forest owl from Gujarat. And a few more locations were reported from, say, Tansa Wildlife Sanctuary near Mumbai. Near Nashik, there was one population. So there are now confirmed populations. Then later on, we did resurveys also. And we found some more populations which were not reported in Maharashtra. So see, I decided that we should do an ecological study of forest owlet in Melghat tiger reserve. So I put up a proposal to ministry, and by the time it got approved, after 6 7 years, then so meanwhile I had also put up a proposal to study a forest salt and managed forest of Khandwa, Madhya Pradesh, where we had found, because those forests were being managed for timber logging. So I said, this population needs to be studied, and we put up a proposal at DST and RRCF, also Raptor Research Conservation and Foundation, Rishad Nauroji's organization. So they were quite happy to fund me. I went and met them, and I said, this is an owl study, and I need funds. It was a long-term study. And first time I had proposed color banding in that. So they said, okay, do you? I had done some mesh netting and banding of other birds while I was in WII, but never held an owl in my hand. So I said, no, we should do this. When I say I, means Jayant and I both, okay? Because we discuss our ideas and we put up the proposals. But as I said, no, I'm more interested. So I take lead in these projects, like research projects. He's always with me, but it goes on my name. So then we hurry to learn these things, methods and techniques and banding and all. We went to USA in 2013, when our project had just begun in Madhya Pradesh. By then we got the funds. So we went to US to stay with two scientists, and I had written to them that I want to learn some of the techniques. So they were very good and welcoming. US Fish and Wildlife, I wrote to, and they put me. I didn't know anyone there. I just sent out an email to some of the big names in owl research, and they responded. They said, okay, you come, and you can stay with our team in our field station, and you can learn. So we decided to make a trip. And my sister and I have a big family in US, so I said, okay, we'll go. So my daughter also came, and then I fractured
So this
my
was
arm.
like you paid for it yourself.
It was a completely paid trip by ourselves. And by then I had fractured my arm,
Oh.
and it had to have a surgery, and a rod was put up, and that my hand was in a sling. And then I said, no, nothing doing. I'm not now changing my plan. I want to go on this trip. Because we had made so many arrangements, so we went. I went with that hand and that sling, and we went, and we stayed with this lady called Janice Reed. She was working on the spotted owls for last 40 years. Oh, amazing! And there was another scientist called David Johnson. I don't know if you know. He's also a big name, very popular scientist, and he had a field station on working on little owl. So where they were doing tagging and the telemetry. So Jayant and I stayed, my daughter stayed with my sister's house and all. We both went for 15 days. We stayed with them, we learned all the techniques and all that. I mean, we tried to participate in their program, understood how it is done, how the protocol is and things like that. And then we came back, and then I applied for permits for color banding for ministry.
In which site?
Madhya Pradesh.
In Madhya Pradesh.
And I asked for 60 birds, and they really gave it to me. They said okay, and I was very excited. And I got excellent support from Madhya Pradesh Forest Department, because some of these people, on the PCCBA officers, they knew me from WII days. They knew Jayant also, so they knew that they will be able to do this kind of work. And so when there was first capture of the forest owlet, no, I could not go because my doctor had told me not to travel because of my hand. So Jayant went, and no, Hari, you can just stop me if you think I'm, because I'm just letting my thoughts go. I don't know
No
how
problem. This is fine, Prachi.
your questions,
Yeah,
because this
I'll
is
come
how
back.
I talk, generally.
That's fine. No, I'll come back to the question. But all of this is interesting, yes.
It's okay. So then we had two trappers. Dr. Remani said, okay, Prachi, I'll send you the best people who can help you. I didn't know how to trap the owls here. I didn't know anything here that time. What I learned from US are very different methods, and this was a very simple, small diurnal owl. So then I called Dr. Remani, said, okay, I'll send you two best people, and they will teach you how. So they stayed with me. Now, Mr. Ali Hussain, I don't know if you know, he's like,
Yeah.
yeah, you must know, right? Ali Hussain and his family, they are involved in trapping all over. All these scientists who work in India or even abroad, he's gone, you know, and train everybody. And he's an amazing man. I have such, and I still, till today, I work with him. Just, we were together in February, you know, when we were doing capturing of owls in Melgar. So he always comes. Like, he, when I call him and I request him, so he says, "Okay, madam, for you, I'll come." And he's an amazing person, amazing. I have so much respect for him. So he came and he just looked at the owl. He said, "Oh, this is so small." He said, like, then 2 days he took to devise a method, you know. Said, "See, I have never held an owl." So he tells me, you know, even today, kid, you are the only person I have worked with owls in India. He said, "Nobody else I have done. So I have to devise my own techniques." You know, because he has learned everything from his father. So he said, "My pitaji ne bhi nahi, had never done it. We have done with more eagles, big owl, big eagles, vultures, water birds. So for owls, then he decided his own technique, and it works very well with the glue trap. You know, he used to put a small bamboo crossfire trap on the floor with a live mouse, and the owl surely would come. So like this, we caught 60 owls, 49 owls, sorry, not 60, 49 owls in Madhya Pradesh. I had got permit for 60, but I did 49, plus 3 more owls for radio telemetry, and then 18 or 19 owls in Melgar. So, using the same method. And then we color banded them, and you know, it was so. Then afterwards, you know, when my hand was okay after 3-4 months, then I was allowed to travel. I went, and the first time I held the owl, and I was so ecstatic, you know. I have a picture with that. I was so happy. You know, somebody had taken, my teammate who was there, took a picture. So yeah, that was very whatever you call it, a eureka moment for me. And every time it's still the same, you know, whenever I hold the owl, I just love them, love their expression, the way they are, you know. And then so that's how we started our work.
Right. So Prachi, when you decided that you wanted, what was the motivation to do color banding when you decided that you wanted to do it?
Yeah, so see, one thing was that, you know, we needed to understand what is the breeding success of these birds, you know. Nothing was known those days, what is the population. Even now, we don't know what is the population of forest owl, though it's an endemic species. We don't know. And see, there is no real differentiation. Sexual dimorphism is not there in the any of the owls. Even the size difference. The other owls, they have reverse sexual dimorphism, you know. The owl or the barn owl, the female is larger than the male. But so there's a paper, I have a paper on this, that the forest owl does not have reverse sexual dimorphism. They are almost have the same thing. We could not make out which is a male, which is a female. Which so everything we wanted to understand for the first time. So I said, ki, you know, this is a good technique to mark and visual recaptures. Okay, to see where, how much they are moving, which is the area of movement, which is a male, female, what are the parental duties. So since I had seen this kind of work done in USA, I was very keen to do the same model to understand if it works. So we did this, and recaptures we got, you know, visual recaptures we got. So we knew the owls were around for quite some time. And interestingly, Hari, one of my banded owl now, that was banded in 2013. She's still there in the same area. She's using the same nest after 10 years. So now still my project is going on in the same area. And the 2013 banded owl is still there. So see, it gives you so much information otherwise also, right? After 10 years. And whenever we used to visit, we used to see our owls. So they would show some local movements. So all that was very useful. And after that, I realized that, you know, we need to go a step further and we should try telemetry. Because then, you know, you will get their home range size. Because otherwise, you know, looking at banding, banded birds, yeah, we would know, okay, you know, this is a male, this is a female, this is the area of use. But if they leave the area, I mean, unless I actually visually see it again, a banded bird, I won't know how far it has gone. So in one case, I saw that the forest owlet, which I had banded, it was a subadult, it traveled 6.5 kilometers to another site and mated, a subadult mated with an adult female who was banded 4 years ago. So this I came to know because they were banded. you know. And see, banding I can put many because many birds, but telemetry I can't do with so many birds, no, expensive
Yeah.
material. So banding is not that expensive. I just needed a good method, safe method, and comments. So which I had. So that's how I did banding. And then when I thought okay, we really need to understand their home range, then I put up a message on one of these email groups that, you know, I want to do radio telemetry. Can somebody advise me how, what kind of, you know, tags I should use for owls? This I give all the sizes and all. Immediately, I got a mail from Peregrine Fund. They said, we would like to donate to you a few of our equipment and all. So would you like that? I said, of course. I was so excited. So they said, okay, you know, you're doing good work. We checked on it and we can give you 6 tags and entire equipment. You know, they donated it. Telemetry, antenna, and a receiver, and everything. So we could do. Then I asked for permission, and I got for 3 birds, and I put VHF tags on 3 birds. This is 2016-17, 17. By the time, and by the time my study was getting over, so I got only 6 months data from that first telemetry which I did. Yeah.
This was still in Khandwa.
Yeah, in Khandwa, correct.
Okay. So at the time when you applied for permits, you know, you said you asked for permits for 60 birds. Did you, was there some idea of what the population of the species was based on earlier work?
Based on my work, yeah, I thought okay, at least we had located about 15 nests by then. So we knew okay, at least there are 2 birds in each because only there's a pair would nest. So 30 birds would be there. And then we thought, okay, juveniles will disperse. So we might even, so, you know, we, for safety first, I asked for 45. Then I talked to the officer. He said, you Prachi, you pehle se 60 ka, abhi you just ask. Karo na karo, it's okay, but you ask for more. So I got the bonus.
Okay. And you mentioned that there were 2 trackers. So Ali Hussein was one. What is the name of the other person?
Rustam, his son-in-law.
His son-in-law.
Rustam.
Okay. So just going back again to the start of this project, Prachi. So how, you know, what was your motivation to decide to start? You know, you said you were interested in owls, and then there was the rediscovery by Pamela Rasmussen, and then, you know, also the study by Farah. When you got into this and decided to, you know, study this formally, was it mainly with the intent of collecting basic information about the species? Was there a conservation goal in mind at that point in time?
Right. So see, Madhya Pradesh, yes. Since I knew that this is in the managed forest, we were seen as being already harvested. You know, the forests are being cut. Timber logging is going on in the forest. So there's a lot of illicit cutting also. So there was a lot of concern because I had seen that area, you know, when we were doing the survey. And in this area, the forest fires were surviving. Even in Dubar, the first site where Pamela had rediscovered, even those areas, there's like immense encroachment and tree felling, you know. But somehow there are peripheral populations just surviving there among all these biotic pressures. So there was a concern, ke, you know, how are they surviving? What can we do? What are the actions which are required? That is why I had applied in for a Madhya Pradesh. And Melghat I did because I wanted to understand ki in a protected area, because the population is so good, what are the... So it must be having a very, you know, like, it would be having a very good ecological... So you would be meeting up with all its ecological requirements, optimum conditions. Like it must be having good cavities, ample cavities. That is why it's able to breed. Because in Madhya Pradesh, I saw... When I was doing the first survey, not the study, that the cavity-bearing trees were also being logged out. So, you know, they are considered as dead trees or log cavity trees. So, they are being felled. So, having understood that the cavity-bearing trees are very important for a lot of cavity-bearing species and especially for the forest audit, we put up a study here and in Melghat for a comparative study. You know, what happens when you have a good protected area? And what is the breeding success between the 2 populations, you know, 2 sites? So that was the question.
By then, you already had some idea about the population in Melghat?
I knew that it is well distributed. I don't know the numbers. Even now, I don't know. Sorry. I know that they are found in almost all the ranges of the divisions, you know, in Bengal. But no attempt has been made to count its population.
Okay. So the mail cart work started in 2017 and it continues till today.
Yeah, it continues. I told you I'd applied in 2010, no? Then they gave me the grant. They said, ah, we've approved. Then 2012, they gave me some grant. Then they took it back. They're saying, no, wait, we are still restructuring. So all that, by then I was like, okay, I'm starting my work in Madhya Pradesh. Then one fine day they called me, said, oh, now we are again going to give it the grant. So by the time it happened, I finally started in 2017. Yeah.
So by grant you mean the permission, or was there also support from the Forest Department?
Grant, by grant I mean for support, financial support.
Financial, so they supported, the Forest Department supported the work
The
in
ministry
the
supported.
ministry. So you're talking about the radio telemetry. Can you talk about, what was doing this relatively simple, because you'd already figured out how to trap the animals and put bands on them, or was there more learning involved in, doing the radio telemetry in terms of handling the animals?
No. Telemetry is not easy, you know. Actually, because you have to continuously track the bird, right? Though it's a lot of fun, and the data is very impressive looking also. But there can be so many other things, like we have to handle the bird very carefully. If something happens, So in Madhya Pradesh, I recaptured the bird also after my work was done and retrieved the tag. But if luckily in Madhya Pradesh nothing happened, but now that I'm working in Maharashtra, see, when a tagged bird is there, any bird after, so we had one mortality of the forest owlet in Maharashtra, in Melghat. It was not because of the tagging. It was like giving data and all. After 2 3 weeks, we found it, the bird had died. So we reported it. In all honest, this thing. And see, again, this is how much of it this should go in print. I don't know. But I'm telling you the problems we scientists deal with, being honest, being a science, doing good science. And they said, oh my God, the forest owlet died because of you. I said, how? I said, how it didn't die because of telemetry. So they said, no, we have to go. I said, you do. I mean, I was very confused. Why are they even suspecting? Because it had not died while I was doing any search, operation, a procedure of putting I capture myopathy. It was not like that. It was giving data. The staff was with us, and we had to take all the proper documentation of release protocol, capture protocol, and every day we would get the data, and it became one like the officers who come, no, so many of them are not wildlife trained. They look everything at from a legal point of view. Oh, it's a Schedule One animal which has died, so it's an offense. I said, offense on whom? I couldn't understand, So the first thing they did is they just burnt the body. I said, you should not have burnt the body. You should have looked at the cause. And my researcher told me, he said that the harness was where it was, so it was not a case of our harness being pulled or something. So they checked. They said no, harness was fine. I said, exactly, then you should have looked for the cause. What is the reason it could have died? Because of, say, poison, some feeding on some poison prey, some whatever.
want, so no, finish what you started saying.
Where was I? So yeah, so telemetry, if you're comparing telemetry and banding, so the results of both are very different levels, because in telemetry you get amazing data on home ranges, seasonal movement, their roosting data. How do I know where the owls roost? It's very difficult to find out. Now with telemetry, I've got amazing data now. So so just I'm just putting another additional information that in MailGuard, then I started telemetry of all other owls, because there's no information on like just common species like spotted, jungle, barn. No, so I started looking at the entire owl assemblage in that to understand why forest owlet, though it shares the habitat with so many other species, which are widely distributed, commonly occurring, and what is it, does the forest owlet require something special in its diet or its nest? Because they are sharing the same habitat. And why is this particular species at the same size in very restricted range? So that is how I am studying all eight species of owls. And what are its conservation needs? You know, like what kind of habitat it requires? What are the actions which will require?
And all eight with telemetry.
So I got permit for 48 birds, you know, from Maharashtra Forest Department. Two radio tags, six individuals of eight species. And from ministry, I got for the forest owlet. So see,
okay.
the senior officers who know us, they have ample faith in us, you know, capability and capacity and our intent. And we got the, it's not easy to get permit, you know, like this, but we got the permit, we raised the funds, you know, because each tag costs like 1.5 lakhs plus accessories, you know, because now we are using GPS tags. So VHF GPS tags. And, you know, we had to get them made because they're very small owls. We can't have solar tags because, you know, they only come out during the night. So we can't have solar tags. Things like that. So we got it manufactured and a lot of time. But ultimately, I got 16 tags, budget for 16 tags and accessories. Everything. It was a huge amount which I just got for telemetry. After
From?
Having all this,
Who funded the work?
So this is funded entirely by Raptor Research and Conservation Fund.
Okay.
So they have been continuously supporting us on my OWL project. Yeah. And it's wonderful to work with that organization, you know.
Okay.
Because Rishad is now not in a very good health, but when he was, you know what he said, you know, I would go to meet him. He's such a big man, you know, Hari. I don't know if you know about Rishad.
I've met him at SCCS once, yes.
He's such a down-to-earth, you know, he's a Godrej family and
yeah.
very, very, very warm person, you know. So I would just go looking at the big office and all, I would like, you know, what I will talk to him. And, you know, he would say, come Prachi, so warmly invite me. Say, you are studying owls, how are you feeling? I said, I'm so happy, Rishad. You know, that was my first thing. He said, you know what he said? He said, you are happy, I am happy. And, you know, it was just so simply said, you know. He said that, you know, because I know his passion for raptors. So he said, I'm so happy that you are doing work on raptors. And he also came to Tansa to see the forest owlet. Our team had gone to show him. He said, oh, this one, it is such a small bird, you know. This was in 2016. And I think after that, he started getting this, you know, his memory loss and all. Now he's not in very good health. I really miss talking to him. He would call me very often, you know, and tell me what did you see new? And I would send him photos and he would be so happy. I'd go to his office, he'll show me his books, his old pictures, his stories, you know. So so because of RRCF, I've been really able to manage continuing my work. Because, you know, other organizations like DST, you know, they give very small funds, you know, for a project like this. It's very fund intensive, you know. You have manpower requirement, you have equipment requirement. So I've also got a family friend to fund some of my tags. When she came to know, so she said, okay, I will definitely, you know, such a good work you're doing, I'll give you some. And she gave me a huge amount also.
So Prachi, we've gone on for 55 minutes. Would you like to end this conversation here and we continue in the next session?
Is that possible?
We can do that, yes. So, I want to talk more about the owl work and also the conservation activities that you have started, you know, the training of the Forest Department and also outreach activities, and I want to talk about how that's linked to the research you have done. We can take that up in the next session.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was feeling very happy actually, you know, Hari, talking to you. Yeah, it makes me feel very happy, and because something which I really believe in, and I can not talk without any other, you know, like just in one flow as my mind. So it makes me feel good. Thanks.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay. I'll just end the recording. We can continue to chat.